the hungry children who used to eat breakfast at our house before school in the morning, and wondering if anyone is feeding them now. Sometimes my father cries too. He cries when he recalls those first days after the attack, when I was somewhere between life and death. He cries at the memory of the attack itself. He cries with relief when he wakes up from an afternoon nap to hear his children's voices in the yard and realizes that I am alive. I don't get angry very often, but I do get angry when people say he is responsible for what happened to me, as if he forced me to speak out, as if I didn't have a mind of my own. If only they could see him now. Everything he worked for over almost 20 years has been left behind. The school he started from nothing, the school that now has 3 buildings and 1,100 students. He used to love nothing more than to stand at the gate and greet the children in the morning. The Khushal school carries on, and each day students pass through that gate, but he is not there to see it. Instead, he goes to conferences on girls' education, and he speaks out for peace as he used to do in Swat. I know it's odd for him now that people want to hear from him because of me and not the other way around. Malala used to be known as my daughter, he says, but I am proud to say that now I am known as Malala's father. It's not safe for us to go to Pakistan. That is true. But one day, when we were homesick, we realized we could bring Pakistan to us. Friends and family come to visit. And Shazia and Kainat, who both go to college in England, stay with us during holidays. My mother is much happier when she has a house full of guests and extra chairs around the dinner table. As her happiness grows, so does her willingness to try new things. She has begun to learn English again. She has also begun appearing in public without her shawl covering her face and has even allowed herself to be photographed. My father, meanwhile, has taken on a new responsibility at home. Recently, I teased him that while he and I are busy speaking about women's rights, my mother is still doing the cooking and cleaning. Now, he cooks every morning. It's the same thing every time, fried eggs. His cooking is full of love, but not so full of flavor. He has done some brave things in the past, starting a school without a coin in his pocket, standing up for women's rights and girls' education, and standing up to the Taliban. But now, my brave, proud Pashtun father has taken on the pots and pans. Chapter 35. Anniversary. As the first anniversary of the shooting approached, many journalists came to interview me. They often seemed so sad about what had happened to me. They said things like, "You and your family have had to leave your home. You have to live in fear. You have had to suffer so much." And even though I was the one who'd gone through the experience, I wasn't nearly as sad as they were. I guess I see my situation differently. If you tell yourself, "Malala, you can never go home because you are the target of the Taliban," you just keep suffering. I look at it this way. I can see. I can hear. I can talk. I can go to school and I can fight with my brothers. I am having a second chance at life, and I am living the life God wants for me. The journalists also ask if I am afraid. I say no, and that is true. What I don't say is that I am afraid of one thing. I wonder sometimes if I will be the same Malala in the future. Will I be deserving of all these honors I have been given? Sometimes when the journalists see my brothers playing so freely, they ask if I am being robbed of a childhood by my campaign for children's rights. I tell them to think of a girl who is married off at 11, or a little boy who has to pick through the rubbish heap to earn money for his family, or the children who have been killed by bombs and bullets. They are the ones who have been robbed of a childhood. And sometimes the journalists seem to want to focus on the attack rather than on my campaign. This frustrates me, but I understand it. It is human curiosity. Here's how I think of it, though. They have already harmed me, leaving permanent scars. But out of the violence and tragedy came opportunity. I never forget that, especially when I think of all the good the Malala Fund has done and will continue to do. We have started a project in Swadh for girls suffering from domestic child labor. We support them so they can go to school and eventually become independent. After months of talking about how much I wanted to help in Jordan, we arranged a trip to help Syrian refugees, many of whom have already missed school for 3 years. I met children there in dirty clothes with no shoes and only a small bag of possessions. I met children there whom I will never forget. It's our duty to help these children get food, shelter, and an education. And we will. I think of the world as a family. When one of us is suffering, we must all pitch in and help. Because when people say they support me, they are really saying they support girls' education. So, yes, the Taliban have shot me. But they can only shoot a body. They cannot kill my beliefs, and they cannot stop my campaign to see every girl and every boy in school. Millions of people prayed for me, and God spared me. I am still here for a reason, and it is to use my life to help people.
Epilogue. One girl among many. On my 16th birthday, I was given the most extraordinary gift. I was invited to speak to the United Nations. It was the first of two trips I would make to New York that year. 400 people would be in attendance, high-ranking officials from all over the world, such as Ban Ki-moon, the Secretary General of the United Nations, and Gordon Brown, the former UK Prime Minister, as well as ordinary children like me. It would be a far cry from the solemn and fearful birthdays I had spent in Pakistan not long ago. My whole family travelled to New York. We saw Annie on Broadway. And we stayed in a hotel where they bring pizza to your room on a silver tray. I like the hustle and bustle of New York compared with sleepy Birmingham. And I felt as if the city were my old friend after seeing it on Ugly Betty. Many people in Pakistan have been told that the United States is a dark and godless place, but everyone I met there was quite nice. I couldn't wait to tell Muniba, America is a very nice place, but it was just as loud and crowded as other cities I have seen, with its honking horns and people rushing here and there. It's like a developed Karachi. During my second trip, I met one of my favorite people in the United States, a man named John Stewart, who invited me to his TV show to talk about my first book and the Malala Fund. He took my campaign very seriously, but he also made funny faces and asked if he could adopt me. I also met the real Ugly Betty, America Ferrara, who is very pretty, and even President Barack Obama and his family. I was respectful, I believe, but I told him I did not like his drone strikes on Pakistan, that when they kill one bad person, innocent people are killed too, and terrorism spreads more. I also told him that if America spent less money on weapons and war and more on education, the world would be a better place. If God has given you a voice, I decided, you must use it, even if it is to disagree with the President of the United States. The day of the UN speech, I was excited. I'd had amazing experiences and met amazing people, but I was still me, a girl who likes to crack her knuckles as loud as she can and draws pictures to explain things. A girl who hates pasta and likes cupcakes and will always like her mother's rice and now loves cheesy Wotsits and fish fingers. A girl who has to stay up late studying for her physics test. A girl who worries if her best friend is mad at her. A girl like any other. Was it really possible that I was going to address the United Nations? How my world had changed. I dressed slowly that morning, putting on my favorite pink shalwar kameez and one of Benazir Bhutto's scarves. I had not written my speech with only the delegates in mind. I wrote it for every person around the world who could take courage from my words and stand up for his or her rights. I don't want to be thought of as the girl who was shot by the Taliban, but as the girl who fought for education, the girl who stands up for peace with knowledge as her weapon. I said in my speech, "Dear brothers and sisters, do remember one thing. Malala Day is not my day. Today is the day of every woman, every boy, and every girl who has raised their voice for their rights. Thousands of people have been killed by the terrorists, and millions have been injured. I'm just one of them. So here I stand, one girl among many. I speak, not for myself, but for all girls and boys. I raise up my voice, not so that I can shout, but so that those without a voice can be heard. Those who have fought for their rights, their right to live in peace, their right to be treated with dignity, their right to equality of opportunity, their right to be educated. On the 9th of October 2012, the Taliban shot me on the left side of my forehead. They shot my friends too. They thought that the bullets would silence us, but they failed. And then, out of that silence came thousands of voices. Terrorists thought that they would change our aims and stop our ambitions. But nothing changed in my life except this. Weakness, fear, and hopelessness died. Strength, power, and courage was born. I'm the same Malala. My ambitions are the same. My hopes are the same. My dreams are the same. One child, one teacher, one pen, and one book can change the world. As I heard the applause and took my seat, all I could think of was that I had come a long way from Malala, the toddler, giving lessons to the empty chairs at the Khushal school, and a long way from the girl who gave speeches to the bathroom mirror. Somehow, by the grace of God, I really was speaking to millions of people. I had once asked God to make me taller. I have realized that God has answered my prayer. God has made me as tall as the sky. So tall, I could not measure myself, but my voice could reach people everywhere. I had promised 100 rakat nafal when I had first asked God to give me height, so I have given him those prayers. But I know that with the immeasurable height, God has also given me a responsibility and a gift. The responsibility to make the world a more peaceful place, which I carry with me every moment of every day, and the gift to be able to do so. Peace in every home, every street, every village, every country. This is my dream. Education for every boy and every girl in the world. To sit down on a chair and read my books with all my friends at school is my right. To see each and every human being with a smile of true happiness is my wish. I am Malala. My world has changed, but I have not.
Please refer to the included PDF for additional information. And now, here is Malala's complete United Nations speech.
Thank you. Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim. In the name of God, the most beneficent, the most merciful. Honorable UN Secretary General, respected President General Assembly, Vok Yeremich,
Honorable UN Envoy for Global Education, Mr. Gordon Brown, respected elders, Assalamu alaikum. Today, it is an honor for me to be speaking again after a long time. Being here with such honorable people is a great moment in my life. And it's an honor for me that today I'm wearing a shawl of Benazir Bhutto Shaheed. I don't know where to begin my speech. I don't know what people would be expecting me to say. But first of all, thank you to God, for whom we all are equal. And thank you to every person who has prayed for my fast recovery and a new life. I cannot believe how much love people have shown me. I have received thousands of good wish cards and gifts from all over the world. Thank you to all of them. Thank you to the children whose innocent worlds encouraged me. Thank you to my elders whose prayers strengthened me. I would like to thank my nurses, doctors, and the staff of the hospitals in Pakistan, in the UK, in the UAE government, who have helped me to get better and recover my strength. I fully support Mr. Ban Ki-moon, the Secretary General, in his Global Education First initiative, and the work of the UN Special Envoy, Mr. Gordon Brown, and the respected President, General Assembly, Vuk Yeremich. I thank all of them for their leadership that they continue to give. They continue to inspire all of us to action. Dear brothers and sisters, do remember one thing. Malala Day is not my day. Today is the day of every woman, every boy, and every girl who have raised their voice for their rights. There are hundreds of human rights activists and social workers who are not only speaking for their rights, but who are struggling to achieve their goal of peace, education, and equality. Thousands of people have been killed by the terrorists, and millions have been injured. I'm just one of them. So here I stand. So here I stand, one girl among many. I speak not for myself, but for those without voice can be heard. Those who have fought for their rights, their right to live in peace, their right to be treated with dignity, their right to equality of opportunity, their right to be educated. Dear friends, on the 9th of October 2012, the Taliban shot me on the left side of my forehead. They shot my friends too. They thought that the bullet would silence us. But they failed. And out of that silence came thousands of voices. The terrorists thought that they would change my aims and stop my ambitions. But nothing changed in my life except this. Weakness, fear, and hopelessness died. Strength, power, and courage was born.